طيب بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. Today this is our 67th session. Or is it 67? Not 67, no. I'm sorry. I'm looking at something else here. طيب, this is session 61 for level 3 fiqh. Session 61. Arabic Lessons in Fiqh, Level 3, Mustawa Thalith, Islamic University of Medina, Arabic Language Institute. Naam. Today, inshallah, we're going to continue where we left off last week in the Book of Hajj with the topic of Shurut Wujub Al-Hajj. Shurut Wujub Al-Hajj. The conditions for the obligation of Hajj. Page, yani the topic begins on 78, and we should be reading from page, actually from the top of page 80. But anyway, let's just like go back and review quickly just a little bit of what we covered last week, just so that everybody can be with us. First thing is that this particular topic begins on page 78. Shurut Wujub Al-Hajj, yani the preconditions that require, if they are fulfilled, require a person, yani, to perform the Hajj. Make it obligatory upon a person to perform Hajj. The first point of this lesson was the yushtarat li wujub al-hajj ma yali. Yani, there are a number of matters that are preconditions in order for it to be obligatory on a person to perform the pilgrimage. How many are they? Somebody, let's not look in the book at this moment. Let's not look in the book at this moment. Just, Danny, for brief, how many are there? How many people know how many there are? How many are the preconditions for the Hajj? One, two, only two people? Three? How many people know how many there are? How many are the preconditions?
In this book?
In this book. How many are the preconditions?
Five.
Oh, okay. All right. So some people said five and some people said six. Okay. Give me one of them. Give me one.
Al-Islam.
Al-Islam. Somebody else. Al-Aql, Al-Balugh, that's three. Somebody else?
Al-Istifa.
Al-Istifa, four. Is there anything else?
Hurriya,
five. In this book? We said five. Okay, the first, Islam, the second. Yani in the book it came Balugh, but the Sheikh mentioned Al-Aql, and then there's Hurriya, and then there's Istifa. So, if a person is a Muslim, and they're sane, and they reach the age of responsibility, and they're free, and they have the ability to make Hajj, it became obligatory on them, fawran. Yani, there's a difference of opinion about fawran, but in any case, the stronger opinion is that they must make the Hajj the first opportunity that arises, if they fulfill all these conditions. The second point that we talked about was Al-Istifa. We talked about last week, Istifa. What do we mean by Istifa? What are the things that are necessary in order for us to say this person has the ability to make Hajj? There have to be a number of things. We mentioned how many things?
We mentioned
four.
Yeah, health.
Okay, one of them. Just give me one. Health. Okay, somebody else.
Physically fit.
Yani, sihat al-badan. That's one.
Financially,
they have to have the financial ability, huh? Okay, amn al-tariq. The road, the way to go has to be safe for them. Means of transportation, a rahila. Okay, those are the four that are applicable to everybody. And there's a fifth one for women specifically, the mahram. That there has to be the presence, wujud, al-mahram. Okay, so these are the main points that we covered last week. We also covered some details of some of these things, and in which, for the sake of time, we're going to skip unless a question comes up that requires us to mention those things. Okay, so we said that the conditions that necessitate, make it obligatory upon a person to perform Hajj, they have to be a Muslim, they have to be of the age of responsibility, they have to be sane, they have to be free, and they have to be able. Okay, I want to specifically look at two points from amongst these, just as a quick review, al-bulugh and al-hurriya. As far as al-bulugh, if a person, a child who didn't reach the age of responsibility, performs Hajj, What do we say concerning that child who performs Hajj? Yani, is it valid, invalid, is it accepted, is it accredited? Yani, is it what? What do we say about it? Now, he said what? They will get reward for it, okay. But if he reaches the age of responsibility and he's able, he has to make Hajj again. Okay, so what else do we want to say about it? The parents will also get reward. Okay, anything else you want to say? Is the Hajj valid?
Yes.
Is it valid? It's valid, okay? It's valid. But as he just alluded to, does he get credit for having performed the Hajj of the lifetime, once in a Hajj lifetime?
No.
If he died before he reached the age of responsibility, he's credited. If he didn't, when he reached age of responsibility, he has to perform Hajj again. So, then, in reference to the child who didn't reach the age of puberty, it is not obligatory upon them to make Hajj, but if they made it, it's valid. However, if they reach the age of responsibility, they have to do it again. As far as the slave, what about the slave? Is it obligatory upon a slave to make Hajj?
No.
It's not obligatory. If they perform Hajj, is it valid?
No.
It is valid. Yani, do they get credit for the obligatory Hajj once in a lifetime?
No.
If they die without getting out of slavery, but if they were freed from slavery and they were able, then they're still obligated to make Hajj once in a lifetime. Okay, that suffice with that. And then we'll go on, yani, to the next part of what we talked about, yani, that we just talked about. How is the istita'a is achieved? Yani, by having sihat al-badan, having good health, amn al-tariq, safe passage, milk al-zad, having the sustenance, the provisions, financial ability to travel, milk al-raha, rahila, yani, having the means of transportation, and for the women, the presence of the mahram. Okay, as far as the presence of the mahram, this is where we stopped at. This was the last thing that we were reading, so I want to go back on that particular point and then go from there. And by the way, last week we read a lot of hadith and some commentary from Bulugh Maram and elsewhere, and we're not going to review all of that, but those details are just extra points. Here, the last point that we read was in reference to istata'a, yani, the things that are necessary to say that a person is able. They have to have good health, safe passage, possession of financial ability, and the means of transportation. Women have to have a mahram. Okay, so in reference to these matters, mahram. The mahram means what? Someone, the near relative that's permanently forbidden for the woman to marry. A near relative that's permanently forbidden for the woman to marry. Yani, like her father, her brother, her son, her grandfather, her uncle, like this. Okay, that's a mahram. Meaning, the person who is a near relative who can accompany her. Because what? They're her relative. And they're prohibited for marriage for her. They are prohibited for marriage. Naam, Zubair.
Yeah, Sheikh, can a son-in-law be mahram for a woman?
A son-in-law?
Yes.
Yani, the son-in-law would mean what?
Daughter.
The woman, her daughter, husband. Can he be a mahram for her? Naam.
Yes, but she's not alive, so.
But what?
If the daughter is not alive, daughter is dead, right? She passed away. Now, can the mother-in-law perform Hajj with the son-in-law?
Can the mother-in-law marry her son-in-law if her daughter dies?
No.
Marry her mother?
No, it's haram.
Permanently prohibited. That's permanent prohibition. Yani, there are some people who, for example, a woman can't marry her husband's brother while she's married to him, right?
Yeah.
But what if he dies? Can she marry him?
No.
So that's what I mean by permanent prohibited. Okay? So that means her husband's brother is not a mahram for her. Even if her husband dies, she could marry him.
No.
So he's not a mahram for her. In any case, look, the simple explanation of this particular question that the brother is asking is that the mahram is the person who can accompany her if she travels. Because he's a close male relative who's prohibited for marriage. Okay, she may have some male relatives who are not prohibited for marriage. Then that's not a mahram. Okay, but the one who's prohibited from marriage. That's what we mean here. Okay? The details of this, Yani, we'll look at a little bit of it, okay, as we go through what we didn't finish reading from last week. Okay, so from what we didn't finish reading, in reference to the having good health. If the person is sick, Yani, good health, having good health is a necessary element of istita'ah, of having the ability to perform Hajj, being able. One of those elements is having good health. If a person is sick, or they're an elderly person, shaykhan, then لَازِمَهُ إِنَابَةُ غَيْرِهِ لِيَحُجُّ عَنْهُ. The person who otherwise has the ability to perform Hajj, except there's one element missing, that is they don't have good health. Due to sickness or old age, or something similar to that, equal to that, then it is necessary that that person appoint, delegate, enable somebody to perform Hajj on their behalf. Person is not able to perform Hajj, they have the money, but they physically can't travel, they don't have the ability to travel, they're sick or whatever, then they have to, Yani, pay for somebody else to perform Hajj on their behalf. Details of that, and we'll talk about a little bit of it maybe, but in any case, that's the main point here. The proof of this is the hadith reported by Al-Bukhari and others, the hadith of Fadl ibn Abbas, radiallahu anhuma, and the imra'a min khash'am, qalat, ya Rasulullah, إن فريضة الله على عباده في الحج أدركت أبي شيخا كبيرا لا يستطيع أن يثبت على الراحلة أفعهج عنه قال نعم وذلك في حجة الوداع. This is reported by Al-Jama'ah, Bukhari, Muslim and others. Yani, the proof that a person who has the ability to make Hajj, except that physically they're not able to travel, that they have to appoint somebody else, is that the hadith of Fadl ibn Abbas, that a woman from Qatham, tribe of Qatham, she said, O Messenger of Allah, the obligation that Allah has placed upon His servants to perform pilgrimage has reached my father while he is an old man. Shaykhan kabiran. La yastatiyu. He is not able to remain firm, yani to ride on the riding animal. Shall I perform Hajj on his behalf? The Prophet said, Na'am. Na'am. And then it is mentioned at the end of this hadith, ذَلِكَ فِي حِجَّةِ الْوَدَاءِ. That was in the farewell pilgrimage of the Prophet ﷺ, meaning that was the final yani decision, the final law concerning this matter, that if a person was unable to make Hajj, then they should yani send somebody else on their behalf. Huh? Yeah, but of course the one who performs Hajj on behalf of somebody else, inshallah we'll come to that perhaps, is required to have performed Hajj for themselves first, because of the hadith of what? Shubruma. We may mention this hadith if we have time, inshallah. وَإِنْ كَانَ الطَّرِيقِ. Second point, أَمْنُ الطَّرِيقِ. وَإِنْ كَانَ الطَّرِيقِ غَيْرَ آمِنٍ. But if the road is not safe for traveling, such that بِأَنْ كَانَ فِيهِ قُطَّاعَ الطَّرِيقِ أو الطرق أو بِهِ مَرْضٌ وَبَائِي أو غَيْرُهُ فَهُوَ مِمَّنْ لَا يَسْتَطِيعُ إِلَيْهِ سَبِيلًا. Yani, if the road is not safe, such that, for example, what?
There are robbers.
قُطَّاع الطُّرُق. There are robbers on the road. Thieves, robbers, criminals, right? أَوْ بِهِ مَرْضٌ وَبَائِي. Or there's some, in the way, there's some, yani, sickness, type of sickness that's contagious. That's contagious, like a plague. In the road that he has to travel through, such something like this, or other than that, from the things that are equal to it, that will prevent a person from traveling, فَهُوَ مِمَّنْ لَا يَسْتَطِيرُ لَيْسِبِ. Then this person is considered the one who doesn't have the ability to make the way to perform Hajj, to get there to perform Hajj. Now, you have a question?
Sheikh, if someone died without making intention for Hajj, can somebody else perform Hajj later on?
That's a different matter altogether, inshallah. That's a different matter altogether. That we discussed that last week in some detail, and we took a lot of time to discuss it, and I'll just say that in general, if a person has the ability to fulfill an obligatory duty and they don't do it without any legitimate excuse, how can somebody else do it on their behalf? There may be a case of a person who was unable to perform an obligatory duty. Can somebody then make it up for them? That's a different matter. But there's details, okay? So the general rule is, this is what we should be concerned about. Person has the ability to perform an obligatory duty, and they don't do it. They just, I don't feel like doing it. I don't want to do it. I refuse to do it. then somebody else can do it for them, can worship Allah for you? And how is that? In any case, we're not gonna, we did that last week. You wasn't here. Sorry. Sorry. Next point. It's a single word. Wabai. Yani wa wabai. Yani waba means something that's contagious. Yani contamination, plague or something like this. Yani a sickness that's contagious that other people can catch. Not a sickness that doesn't, it's not contagious. Yani if there's a sickness that people, it's contagious, people can catch it, then that allows a person to be excused from traveling on that road where that may occur and they may become sick. The next point. In reference to possessing the financial means and the rahila, the ability, yani the means of transportation. As far as this, they said, فَأَمَّا مِلْكْ الزَّادْ وَالرَّاحِلَ فَقَدْ فُصِّرَتْ بِهِ الْإِسْتَطَاعَةُ فَقَدْ فُصِّرَتْ بِهِ الْإِسْتَطَاعَةُ Yani as far as these two things, the financial means and the means of transportation to reach Mecca if a person lives outside of there in another country, then these two things are what al-istata'a has been defined as. Istata'a has been defined as azad wa rahila. Except that, as Shaykh al-Albani, rahimahullah, in Irwa al-Ghalil, in 988, he says, the hadith, or the statement of Anas, fi qawlihi azza wa jalla, man istata'a ilayhi sabila, yani that's what they're referring to, fussirat bi al-istata'a, yani concerning the saying of Allah, man istata'a alayhi sabila, yani hajj is obligatory upon the people, for whoever has the ability to reach it, qala, it was said, that somebody said, qila ya Rasulullah, mas sabil, O Messenger of Allah, what is the sabil that's in this ayat, man istata'a alayhi sabila? What is meant by as sabil? And the Prophet ﷺ said, azad wa rahila. Yani fussirat bihi al-istata'a, yani bizad al-rahila, in the narration of Anas ibn Malik, somebody asks, what is the sabil? And the Prophet said, having the financial means and the means of transportation, reported by Ad-Darqutni and others. Except that Shaykh al-Albani said that this narration is da'if. Yani marfu'an, marfu'an, it's da'if. As far as mawquf, as a statement of Anas ibn Malik, that might be, yani, not, yani, it might not be da'if. But in any case, as a marfu' statement, of the Prophet ﷺ, Shaykh al-Albani said in Irwa al-Ghalil, hadith number 988, that as a statement attributed to the Prophet is da'if. It's da'if. In any case, the majority of the scholars have explained that istita'a is the zad and the rahila, having financial means and the means of transportation. In addition to what? Sihatul badan and amn al-tariq. Safe road, not just the means of transportation, but the road has to be safe. And not just having financial means, but the person has to have the physical ability also as well. Okay, as far as, yani, this is in reference to the conditions that are applicable to everyone. Yani, having good health, having financial means, means of transportation, and having what? Yani, safe passage. This is in reference to everybody. As far as the woman specifically, أَمَّا وُجُود mahram لِلْمَرْأَى فَلِأَنَّ النَّبِيِّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ نَهَى أَنْ تُسَافِرَ الْمَرْأَى بِدُونْ ذِي رَحِمْ mahram. Yani the reason why the presence of a mahram for the woman is also a part of what is considered as istita'a is because the Prophet ﷺ prohibited women from traveling without the rahim mahram. Yani a near blood relative that yani is a mahram for her. And actually it could also be any kind of travel. No, any kind of travel. What do you mean? Can I travel from Brooklyn to Queens? No. Traveling meaning that's considered, yani, safar. When a person leaves the city that they live in, leaves the place where they live in to go to another city, to another town, to another state, to another country. Yani, the Prophet ﷺ prohibited women from traveling without a mahram for a day and a night. And in some narrations, for 3 days and three nights. And in some narrations, he mentioned it mutlaqan, without any, yani, restriction to time. Prohibit for women to travel without a mahram. Now, that would be from the sunnah that a person should not allow their wife or their mother or their sister or their daughter or whoever they're responsible for to travel alone without a mahram. They should not be traveling alone without a mahram. Huh? Oh, okay. Yani, so if we said, if this is a sunnah, it's a sunnah in the sense that, yes, it's from the way of the Prophet ﷺ. It's that which Allah has legislated, but it's not sunnah in the sense that, yani, as some people understand sunnah in a different context, that the sunnah is those things which are extra, voluntary. You can take or leave. If you do them, you get reward. If you don't do them, there's no punishment. That's not sunnah in that sense. No, it's haram for her to travel without a mahram. It's haram. That's not something you can take or leave. Okay, next point, because we really try to get through a little bit, okay? Then he said, the Prophet ﷺ prohibited women from traveling without a mahram. The proof of this is the hadith of Abdullah ibn Abbas, radiallahu anhuma. May Allah be pleased with him and his father. He said, سَمِعْتُ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهِ وَسَلَّمَ يَقُولُ لَا يَخْلُوَنَّ. Listen to the language of this hadith. لَا يَخْلُوَنَّ رَجُلٌ بِإِمْرَأَةٍ إِلَّا وَمَعَهَا ذُو مَحْرٍ وَلَا تُسَافِرْ الْمَرْأَةُ إِلَّا مَعَ ذِي مَحْرٍ. Yani, the Prophet ﷺ said, in the emphatic form, verb form, لَا يَخْلُوَنَّ وَنُونَ التَّأْكِيدِ. It is absolutely not permissible for a man to be alone with a woman unless there is a mahram with her. Somebody, a close male relative, with her. Yani, in the presence, with her, not being alone with her. And the woman is not allowed to travel except that there is with her a mahram. And he didn't say for a day and a night or 3 days and a night, period. فَقَامَ رَجُلٌ فَقَالَ يَا رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِنَّ إِمْرَأَتِي خَرَجَتْ حَاجَةً وَأَنِّي اقْتُتِبْتُ فِي غَزْوَتِي كَذَا وَكَذَا. A man stood up when he heard the Prophet ﷺ saying that, he became concerned. A woman can't travel without a mahram. He said, يَا رَسُولُ اللَّهِ, my wife has gone out to perform pilgrimage. And I didn't go with her, basically, right? Because I have been signed up. I have been assigned to go into such and such battle. فَقَالَ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ اِنْتَلِقْ فَحُجَّ مَا عِمْرَاتِكَ. The Prophet ﷺ ordered him, then go forward and perform pilgrimage with your wife. Man, forget about the battle you were signed up for, go and catch up with your wife. رَوَاهُ الْبُخَارِي وَمُسْلِمْ وَاللَّوْذْ لِمُسْلِمْ. Okay, this hadith we read last week, but because of its importance in reference to the question that just came, so it came here like this. Yani, I'm really going to see on the paper, right? So we're emphasizing again the meaning of the prohibition of women from traveling alone, to the extent that the Prophet ﷺ told a man, forget about going out to the battle, go and catch up with your wife. That is more important. She can't travel by herself. You have to go with her. Okay, so forget about everything else that you signed up for, they signed you up for, and get on, catch up with your wife. Naam.
Sheikh, so we have, you know, many sisters who convert to Islam.
Inshallah, we're going to come to that. Sister who accepted Islam and she doesn't have a mahram, that's what you're saying?
Exactly.
That she doesn't have anybody to travel with her. Okay, so basically, yani, without going into the details, we'll talk about the details if we have time. What time is this class over?
5:45.
Okay, so we're going to come to that, inshallah. But basically, yani, Allah said in the Quran that this Hajj is a right that Allah has over the people, من استطاع إليه سبيلا, the one who's able to go. So if a woman doesn't have a mahram, it's forbidden for her to travel. Is she able to go? So then it's not obligatory upon her. And if a person is unable to do any good deed, whether it's an obligatory deed or a voluntary deed, if a person is unable to do it, but they have in their heart sincere intention to do it, then إِنَّمَا الْعَمَالُ بِالنِّيَاتِ وَإِنَّمَا لِكُلِّ امْرِئٍ مَا نَوَى. Every person will have the reward for what they intended. If a person sincerely intended to make Hajj, but they were unable to, inshallah the reward is with Allah. She shouldn't worry. She's good, inshallah. After this, استطاع, نعم. Okay, I'm going to just quickly refer to Al-Wajiz on page 237 under what is istifa. I'm not going to read everything they said there, but I'm just going to read At the bottom of the page, 237, it says Hajj al-Mar'a, the pilgrimage of the woman. If all of the conditions of istita are present that have been mentioned, in reference to the woman, if all of them are present, wajaba alayhi al-Hajj ka-rajul tamaman. If all of the conditions, good health, safety passage, transportation, if she has everything, then it's obligatory upon her like it's obligatory upon men, except that, illa أنه يشترط في حقها شرط زائد. Except there's an extra condition for the woman, and that is that she be accompanied by her husband or mahram. If she didn't find, فإن لم يجد فليست مستطيعة. If she didn't find a mahram, then she is not of those who are able. She is not of those who are able. She's not able, and that's because of the hadith that we just got finished reading. Okay, now I'm going to go to the explanation of Shaykh al-Imam Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen, his explanation of the shurut of wujub al-hajj wal-umrah. The Shaykh mentioned some points here that are not mentioned in what we read concerning the shurut in our textbook, and that's for the benefit of that, inshallah, we want to go to what he said. On page 306, in the book called what? What's the Shaykh's book? Fiqh al-ibadat. Page 306, Shurut, Wujub, Al-Hajj, Wal-Umrah. Shaykh is talking about both Hajj and Umrah. Page 306. The question number 210. Fadilat to Shaykh. Mahiya Shurut, Wujub, Al-Hajj, Wal-Umrah. Oh, noble Shaykh, what are the conditions that make Hajj obligatory and Umrah upon a person? The answer, Shurut, Wujub, Al-Hajj, Wal-Umrah, Khamsatun, Majmu'atun, Fi Qawla Nazim. Yani the conditions that make Hajj and Umrah obligatory are five, and they are all collected in a line of poetry by a poet. Al-Hajj wal-Umratu wajibani fil umri marratan bila tawani bi sharti islamin kadha hurriya aqlan bulugun qudratan jaliya. Yani this is a line of poetry that a poet wrote, and the meaning of it, it contains the five conditions that make Hajj obligatory on a person. He said Hajj and Umrah are both obligatory. Once in a lifetime, fil umri marra, bila tawani, yani without, yani holding back, or being slow or indifferent or negligent in doing it. Meaning you have to do it ala fawr. Bi sharti islamin, wa kadha hurriya, with the condition that a person is a Muslim and that they are free. Aqlan bulugan wa qudratu jaliya, and the person is sane, and they reach the age of responsibility, and they have, yani the ability, clear ability, qudra, to perform the Hajj. This is the five conditions the Shaykh mentioned from the poetry. وَيَشْتَرِتْ لِوُجُوبِهِ أَوْلًا. The first condition that make it necessary is Al-Islam. Naam. That's what the Shaykh is saying. That's what he's saying. Yani, the Shaykh said, they asked him, what are the conditions for the obligation of Hajj and Umrah? The Shaykh said, شُرُوت وُجُوب الْحَجْ وَالْعُمْرَةِ خَمْسَةٌ. There are five that are make Hajj and Umrah obligatory upon. Anyway, there's a difference of opinion about it. This is, inshallah, the stronger opinion. Shaykh said, the first of those conditions that make Hajj obligatory and Umrah, because he's talking about both of them, أولاً الإسلام. Listen to what the Shaykh says here. فَغَيْرُ مُسْلَمْ لَا يَجِبَ عَلَيْهِ الْحَجِ. Yani we said that what? Being a Muslim is a condition for it to be obligatory. And it's also a condition for it to be valid. And it's also a condition for, if it's not valid, then it's not accepted, right? So the Shaykh says what? The non-Muslim, it is not obligatory for him to make Hajj. بَلْ وَلَا يَصَحُّ مِنْهُ لَوْ حَجَّ. Rather, it's not even valid if he were to perform pilgrimage. If he were to perform it. بَلْ وَلَا يَجُوزُ دُخُولُهُ مَكَّ. Rather, it's not even permissible for him to enter Mecca. Listen how the Shaykh explains this, right? He doesn't just tell us that it's not obligatory, but he tells us it's not even valid. Rather, not even permissible for the non-Muslim to enter the city of Mecca. لِقَوْلِهِ. The proof of this, I won't just make claims, right? But what is the proof? لِقَوْلِهِ تَعَالَى. Surah At-Tawbah, 9th Surah, 28th Ayat. إِنَّمَا الْمُشْرِكُونَ نَجَسٌ فَلَا يَقْرَبُوا الْمَسْجِدَ الْحَرَامَ بَعْدَ عَامِهِمْ هَذَا. Yani, indeed, verily, the mushrik, pagan disbelievers, are najis. Yeah, they are unclean. فَلَا يقربوا. So they must not come near المسجد الحرام بعد عامهم هذا, after this year of theirs. يعني meaning after this, يعني the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم announced that no, after this year, no pagan will be allowed to come to the Kaaba, to come to Mecca. This is Surah At-Tawbah, 9th Surah, 28th Ayah. فَلَا يَحِلُّ لِمَنْ كَانَ كَافِرًا بِأَيِّ سَبَبْ كَانَ كُفْرُهُ. Yani it's not permissible for any person who's a disbeliever, no matter what was the cause of their kufr. Whatever, their kufr because of whatever, it doesn't make a difference. Kafir is kafir. It's not permissible for him to enter Mecca. لَا يَحِلُّ لَهُ دُخُول حَرَمْ مَكَّةِ. Yani the sacred area of Mecca. It doesn't just mean the Kaaba. It doesn't just mean the masjid. It doesn't just mean the immediate land around it. The Haram of Mecca. It's not permissible for any non-Muslim to enter that sacred precinct. ولكن but ولكن يحاسب الكافر على ترك الحج وغيره من فروع الإسلام على قول الراجي من أقوال أهل العلم. Now here's the benefit the Sheikh brings to this. Another benefit the Sheikh brings to this topic. It's not obligatory, but they will be called to account for it. The kafir will be accountable, yuhasab, for his abandoning the Hajj. And other than it, from the branches of Islam, like zakat and salat and siyam, he is accountable for it. Ala qawl al-raji. What does that mean? The preponderant view. So what do we indirectly understand from that statement? That there's difference of opinion. That there are other views. But the Shaykh is saying, in his way of seeing it, the most preponderant, al-qawl al-raji, the most preponderant view, is that they will be called to account for abandoning the things that Allah made obligatory upon His servants.
Actually, I had a question about this one a long time ago. When you say call it large, does it mean that the majority?
Because no, it doesn't mean the majority. No.
The majority.
No.
So it's like you're saying according to my view. Because how
no.
Who distinguishes between?
No.
That's what I'm saying. Because yeah. if not the majority, like saying. According to my view, because how do you...
Okay, this is an important question. I get the question, right? And I don't want to take a lot of time with the side questions, right? But it's an important question. So I'll just briefly summarize the answer to this question. Is that al-rajih doesn't mean the majority. It means the stronger view based on evidence. I hear your question, right? I just want to say that first, right? Second point is, so that's my view that this is the stronger based on evidence. And somebody else may have a different view. That no, my view is the stronger one based on evidence, right? Legitimate. Now, so what is really the raji? Is you have to examine the evidences. If somebody says this view is the stronger view, and somebody else says no, our view is the stronger view, then examine the evidences. Whichever one has the weightiest evidence, then that's the raji. Okay, so when the Shaykh says, أقول الراجي من أقوال العلماء, يعني is the way he sees it, yeah. Somebody might differ and say, no, that's not the قول الراجي. The قول الراجي is what we're saying. Okay, bring your proof, and bring your proof. Okay, the Shaykh brings his proof. Whoever has different view, then let them bring their proof. Here's the Shaykh's proof. He said, this is the Qawl al-Raji. Based on what? Based on the saying of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Based on the ayat in the Quran, in Surah Al-Muddathir, 74th Surah, 39-47. The saying of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, إِلَّا أَصْحَابُ الْيَمِينَ فِي جَنَّاتٍ يَتَسَاءَلُونَ عَنُ الْمُجْرِمِينَ مَا سَلَكَكُمْ فِي السَّقَرِ. This is the point here, right? Except the companions of the right hand, the people of Jannah, they will be in Jannah asking about the mujrimeen, the kafirs, the disbelievers, the people who are in the hellfire. مَا سَلَكَكُمْ. They will be saying to them, مَا سَلَكَكُمْ فِي السَّقَرِ. What is it that caused you to be thrown in the hellfire? To be admitted into hellfire? What is it that caused you to be in the fire? وَعَلَيْكُمْ السَّلَامُ. What did they say? The disbelievers, the pagans, the mushriks, the people who Allah placed in the hellfire, when the people in the paradise will be saying, what is it that caused you people to be in the hellfire? They themselves, the people in the hellfire will say, قَالُوا لَمْ نَكُوا مِنَ الْمُصَلِّينَ. It was because we didn't used to pray. Why are they in the hellfire? Because Allah called them to account for them not praying. They will say, why are they in the hellfire? Allah says. They will say, because we didn't pray. وَلَمْ نَكُوا نُطَعِمُوا الْمِسْكِينَ. We didn't used to feed the people who were poor and needy. وَكُنَّا نَخُوضُ مَا الْخَائِدِينَ. And we used to engage in false speech with the people who engage in foolishness. وَكُنَّا نُكَذِّبُ بِيَوْمِ الدِّينِ. And we used to deny the day of accounting, the day of judgment. حَتَّى أَتَانَا الْيَكِينَ. Until that which is certain came to us, meaning until we died in that condition of kufr. And even though we were kafirs, Allah is going to punish us because we didn't pray. Because we didn't pray. That's what Allah says in the Quran. End of the point. People have a different view, no problem. Bring their proof. Like he brought clear evidence from the Quran. الشرط الثاني, العقل. The second condition that we said, يعني from the conditions that make it obligatory to perform Hajj, in intellect, يعني the person has their sanity. فالمجنون لا يجب عليه الحج. فلو كان الإنسان مجنونا من قبل أن يبلغ حتى مات فإنه لا يجب عليه الحج ولو كان غنيا. This is another point the Sheikh brings. Right? We said that the person who is insane is not obligated to perform Hajj. Rather, we said that his Hajj, if he did perform Hajj, is not valid because he doesn't have sanity. It's not valid. The Sheikh is saying the person who's insane is not obligated to perform Hajj. And if the person was insane from the time before they reached the age of responsibility, yani while they were a child, before they reached the age of responsibility, they became insane. And they remained in that condition until they died. Hatta mata. Then it's not obligatory on that person to perform Hajj even if they were rich. Now that's different between the old person who is rich, who has money but can't travel. They have to send somebody. But the insane person, aslan, is not obligatory upon them to make Hajj. Al-thalith, the third condition, al-bulug. Yani this, the order of these two are reversed from in the book, right? Al-aql wal-bulug. Man kana dun al-bulug. Whoever is less than the age of responsibility. فَإِنَّ الْحَجْ لَيْجِبُ عَلَيْهِ وَلَكِنْ لَوْ حَجَّ فَحَجُّهُ صَحِيحٌ. This is what we said before. The Hajj on the child who didn't reach the age of responsibility is not obligatory. But if that child did perform Hajj, then his Hajj is sahih. Yani the Hajj is valid. إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا يُجْزِئُهُ عَنْ فَرِيضَةِ الْإِسْلَامِ. Except that what? Except that what? But he's not given credit for having performed the obligatory Hajj of once in a lifetime. Yani meaning that if he reached the age of responsibility and he's able, he has to make Hajj again, even though he performed Hajj as a child. His Hajj is valid, but it's still upon him to perform the Hajj once in a lifetime if he reaches adulthood and he has the ability. And this is based on the hadith of the Prophet that we mentioned previously about the woman who raised the child to the Prophet and said, is there Hajj, wa alaykum salam, is there Hajj for this person? Meaning, is this person, yani, permissible, allowed, credited with making Hajj? قَالَ نَعَمْ وَلَكِ أَجْرٌ. Yes, this child can be taken for Hajj, and there's a reward for you for doing so. وَلَكِنَّهُ لَا يُجْزِيهُ عَنْ فَرِيضَةِ الْإِسْلَامِ. Again, the Shaykh repeated, but he will not get credit for performing the Hajj once in a lifetime. لَأَنَّهُ لَمْ. Listen to the reasoning the Shaykh said. لَأَنَّهُ لَمْ يُوَجَّهْ إِلَيْهِ الْأَمْرَ بِهَا. لِأَنَّهُ لَمْ يُوَجَّهْ إِلَيْهِ الْأَمْرُ بِهَا. Because the child has not been addressed with the command of making Hajj. When Allah ordered the people, He wasn't ordering children. He wasn't ordering children. حَتَّى يُجْزِيهُ عَنْهُ. So, such that, since he wasn't even the one who was intended here by the command for Hajj, so how could he then be given credit for having performed the Hajj once in a lifetime? Until he reaches the age of responsibility, then that command is applicable to him and it's obligatory for him to do it. Yani, because it's not what? It's not addressed to him. Illa ba'da bulughi, until after he reached the age of responsibility. And here the Shaykh brings another point, very important point, and this is not related to the fiqh of the obligation of Hajj, rather it's related to the reality of the situation that we find in the world today. Wa bihadhihi al-munasiba. On this occasion, bihadhihi al-munasiba, uhibbu an aqulu. Yani the Shaykh said, what? Uhibbu an aqulu. I want to say something. Huh? Yeah. Something I like to say. I want to just tell the people about this matter. إِنَّهُ فِي مِثْلِ هَذِي الْمَوَاسِنِ الَّتِي يُكْثِرْ فِيهَا الزِّهَامِ وَيَشُقُّ فِيهَا الْإِحْرَامِ بِالصِّغَارِ وَمُرَاعَةً إِتْمَامْ مَنَاسِقِهِمْ. Yani in this type of season, yani like in Hajj or in Ramadan, in this type of season, because it could be Umrah, right, in Ramadan. In this type of season in which the Ziham is a lot, meaning crowdedness, Ziham, It's the ham. It's crowded, very, very crowded. And it is difficult in this season for the ihram of the child or paying attention, guarding the completion of their performance of the rites of Hajj. It became difficult because of the crowds. Rather, it's difficult for a strong man, let alone a child. Forget about a woman who's by herself that we talked about last week, right? Because these crowds are not like crowds you've ever seen before. Wallahi, until you went there in Hajj, or you went there Umrah and Ramadan, you didn't know what crowds are like. Sometimes you can't even move. You can't even take a step. There's no such thing as running between Safa and Marwa. Khalas, you're just trying to get from one point to the next as best you can. In this kind of crowd, the Shaykh is saying, Al-awla, Allah yuhrimu, la bihajjin wa la bi umratin. And this, it's better that you don't put them into ihram, not for Hajj or Umrah. Children. Ani haula sigar. I'm talking about the children. It's better, not the adults, but the children. It's better that you don't go and put them in a state of ihram, not for Hajj or Umrah. لِأَنَّهُ يَكُونُ فِيهِ مَشَقَّةٌ عَلَيْهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ أَوْلِيَاءِ أُمُورِهِمْ. Because it will be a hardship upon the child and whoever is responsible for them. And whoever is responsible for them. وَرُبَّمَا شَغْلُوهُمْ عَنْ إِتْمَامِ نُسُقِهِمْ. يعني ربما شغل الأولاد آباهم أو أمهاتهم عن إتمام نسقهم. يعني the perhaps, he said, that شغلهم, يعني the children will occupy their parents who are taking them. Occupy them, distract them from completing their own rites of Hajj. The children will occupy their fathers or occupy their mothers, yet making it difficult for them to even complete their own Hajj, the rites of Hajj. فَبَقُوا فِي حَرَجْ. So then they will find themselves in what? Difficulty. Haraj. وَمَا دَامَ الْحَجْ لَمْ يَجِبْ عَلَيْهِمْ فَإِنَّهُمْ فِي سَاعَةٍ مِّنْ أَمْرِهِمْ. So as long as Hajj is not obligatory to them at this particular point, then they have any time. They have space. They have room. Yani there's sa'a fi amrahim. It's easy. Yani they can do it at another time. That's in reference to bulugh. And the fourth condition is hurriya. Yani hurriya means the person is free. Is a free person. فَالرَّقِيقَ al-mamluk la يَجِبْ عَلَيْهِ الْحَجِ. Yani the person who's in slavery, Hajj is not obligatory upon them. لِأَنَّهُ mamluk مَشْغُولٌ بِسَيِّدِهِ. Because he is in slavery, he's occupied with serving, taking care of the needs of his master. فَهُوَ مَا أَذُورٌ بِتَقْرِ الْحَجِ. So he's excused if he abandoned the Hajj. لَا يَسْتَطِيعُ السَّبِيلِ إِلَيْهِ. This is a person who doesn't have the ability to get there, to do it, to perform the Hajj, because yani, he's occupied with the one that is controlling his life. But if the master takes the slave to Hajj and he performs Hajj, is it valid? Naam, it's valid. However, not the lifetime Hajj. If he's freed from slavery before he died, and he has the ability, once he's free, then he has to make it again in order to fulfill the obligation of Hajj once in a lifetime upon a Muslim. Al-Khamis, Al-Qudra al-Hajj. Huh? If the slave died in slavery, he never got a chance, then inshallah, that Hajj that he made will be credited to him.
And also, when somebody wishes to send someone else to go Hajj on behalf of he's going to do the Hajj, and then they both die after the guy the sender already went to do the Hajj. So he's gonna get the benefit the credit of Hajj, or who's gonna get it?
If somebody was unable to perform Hajj physically, but they had the money and they sent somebody,
yes,
and the person went on the behalf, performed Hajj. They didn't go?
That person goes, but he didn't go before that.
No. You cannot perform Hajj on behalf of somebody else unless you have performed Hajj first for yourself. So that's not permissible. That's not permissible for somebody to send somebody. The person they're sending never performed Hajj. Who gets the credit? He can't go. It's not permissible for him to do that. He has to perform Hajj for himself first. We're going to come to that hadith, inshallah. Naam. The person who didn't have the ability to make Hajj, if somebody performs it on behalf as a charity, inshallah, no harm in that if they performed Hajj for themselves first. If they performed Hajj for themselves first. Naam. Wa alaykum salam.
Wa
Now.
Now, my grandmother took us out in the prostitute's island, the one that's to the left.
Right.
Now, I want to make hajj for both of them. You can't make one hajj for both of them.
No, you can't make one hajj for both of them. One at a time. One trip, make hajj. Next year or any time after that, you can make another one for somebody else. Inshallah. Good? Is it good? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next point. Yeah, if a person died without making hajj, because they were unable to perform hajj, then somebody can give them charity. Now, yeah, you can make it for them, inshallah, with what we said before, being clear, one at a time, one at a time. Huh? I don't want to like look at that, because that's a long discussion. Somebody else can do it. No, I mean, you can pay for somebody to go on behalf of somebody else. Yani, even if somebody didn't make hajj, they were unable to, and somebody's going to go on their behalf, it doesn't have to be a relative. Somebody else can go, even if they're not a relative. Even a person is living, they don't have to be dead, and they're unable to make hajj, and if they have a condition that prevents them permanently from making hajj, then somebody can go on their behalf, relative or non-relative. Except that, it should only be for the sake of Allah, not to make money, hire that person, pay them some money to perform hajj in addition to what it costs for them to go and come back and whatever they have to do. We'll talk about that in the end if we have time. If we have time, that's if we ever get to it. Now.
So, does the person who do hajj for another person have a portion of the reward?
Does that person have a portion of the reward? They don't have a portion of that reward, of that person's hajj. But do they get reward? Yani, if a person performed hajj on behalf of somebody else, after they perform hajj themselves, right? And they did it for somebody else, not for money. They're not getting paid anything. They just gave them enough money to get the ticket, to buy food while they're there, and to do whatever, to pay for the sacrifice. That's all they got. They didn't take any money from it. Will they get any reward for that? How could they not? How could they not? If I went through all of that for somebody else, you know what? Hajj is not like a picnic, right? If somebody was to do that for somebody else, of course Allah will reward them for that. This is a tremendous charity that a Muslim is doing for their brother. Muslim. Allahu A'lam. But the point is that it will not take away from the reward of the person who they're doing it for. It will not take away from their reward. Because if somebody's doing something for somebody else, that reward is for them. As far as my reward is for the charity. Yani, for whatever effort I made for the sake of Allah to help somebody else. To help somebody else. Any extra reward above and beyond, Allahu A'lam. But that's clear. That if a person does a good deed to help somebody else, they're going to be rewarded for that. Absolutely. Especially somebody going through the hardship of performing hajj. Naam, it's a wonderful thing, but it's not like a picnic. It's not a walk through a rose bush. And it's difficult. It's difficult. Extremely difficult. Point number five. And time is running out on us. Al-Qudratu. Al-Hajji. Bil-Mali. Wal-Badani. Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen. Rahimahullah. Fiqh Al-Ibadat. Page 308. He says the fifth condition that makes hajj necessary on a person is Al-Qudra. Al-Hajj bil-Mal wal-Badan. Here he's referring to what? Al-Istita'a. Al-Istita'a. And he's defining it here as having the ability by both having financial ability and physical health. And of course, this would also include having the transportation means being available. Because maybe a person has good health and they have the money and they go to the airlines, they said no more tickets. Everything is booked. Can't get on no plane. Are they going to walk to Hajj? Too late to walk now. You got to start walking about 6 months early. Nah, but the point is, the Shaykh is saying what? He's saying mal and bedan, but he means everything else that's part of istitaa. But the main essential elements of istitaa is having good health and having the money. Because if you have the money, generally you're going to be able to find the transportation means. And of course, it has to include that safe passage, right? Pretty much today there's safe passage. People flying planes and stuff like that, they have safe passage. I mean, you don't have a lot of planes being hijacked anymore, right? There was a time when that was happening. Not happening so much today, I don't think. At least I'm not hearing about it. I don't read the newspapers, so maybe it is. فَإِنْ كَانَ الْإِنسَانِ قَادِرًا بِمَالِهِ بِدُونَ بَدَنِهِ. Yani here the Shaykh is comparing these two issues of istitaa, that is, or qudra, wealth and physical health. If a person was able, due to wealth, they had enough wealth to make hajj, but duna badanihi, but he didn't have physical ability. فَإِنَّهُ يُنِيبُ مَنْ يَحُجُّ عَنْهُ. Then that person must appoint and facilitate somebody to make Hajj on his behalf. What is the proof of this? The Hadith Ibn Abbas that we mentioned before, the lady from Qatam, she asked the Prophet ﷺ about Hajj becoming obligatory while her father was an old man, unable to ride. Can she make Hajj for him or should she make Hajj? فَأَحُجُّ عَنْهُ Shall I make Hajj on his behalf? Prophet said, yes, reported by Al-Bukhari Muslim. That was in the farewell pilgrimage. Now the Shaykh says, in that Hadith is the saying, فَفِي قَوْلِهَا In her saying, أَدْرَكَتْهُ فَرِيضَةُ اللَّهِ عَلَىٰ عِبَادِهِ فِي الْحَجِّ Yani that the obligation which Allah has placed upon His servants to perform the pilgrimage reached him. Yani while he was an old man, unable to ride. In that statement, وَإِقْرَارَ النَّبِيِّ صَلَى اللَّهِ وَسَلَّمَ إِيَّاهَا عَلَىٰ ذَلِكَ دَلِيلٌ عَلَىٰ أَنَّ مَنْ كَانَ قَادِرًا بِمَالِهِ دُونَ بَدْنِهِ فَإِنَّهُ يَجِبُ عَلَيْهِ أَيُقِيمَ مَنْ يَحُجُّ عَنْهُ Yani the Shaykh is this istidlal here, right? This is his yani manner of reasoning, the argument that he's making from that hadith. In her words, she said to the Prophet that the obligation of Hajj became obligatory to my father when he's unable to travel. The Shaykh is saying those words and the Prophet agreeing to what she said, that okay, if he's unable, then this is a dalil that what? That whoever is able, yani financially, but not physically, then that person must appoint someone. يُقِيمُ مَنْ يَحَجُّ عَنْهُ Must set up, yani the way for somebody to perform Hajj on their behalf, as far as if the person is قَادِرٌ بِبَدْنِهِ دُونَ مَالِهِ Person is physically able, but they don't have the money. لَا يَسْتَطِيعُ الْوُصُولِ إِلَى مَكَّ بِبَدْنِهِ Yani he has the physical ability, but he's not able to get to Mecca, not physically able to get there, because he doesn't have the financial ability. فَإِنَّ الْحَاجِ لَا يَجِبُ عَلَيْهِ Then Hajj is not obligatory upon him. He doesn't have the ability. Okay, we just have like one paragraph left and a little bit of time. Make your question brief.
Person have all the money and help and everything. He never went there. Ain't Hajj is a gift from Allah.
I've never read that anywhere. I've never heard any of the scholars saying that the Hajj is a gift from Allah. Yani, if a person has, I mean, I don't know what that means. It's a gift from Allah. But in any case, if a person has physical health and financial ability and every other, yani, of the conditions making Hajj obligatory is obligatory, and they didn't make Hajj, then they're in trouble. So if you say it's a gift from Allah, meaning that they're excused because it's only a gift if Allah gives it to whoever he will, they're not excused, no. I mean, if that's what that means. I've never heard that before, but if that's what that means, that they had all the ability, but they didn't go because Hajj is a gift from Allah, so therefore they're excused because Allah didn't give them this gift. No, they are not excused. They are liable. They are called to account for it. Naam. If the kafir is called to account for it, and he's not even a Muslim, then how a Muslim is not accountable? How does he just get away with it? وَمِنَ الْقُدْرَةِ and also coming under the قُدْرَة إِسْتِطَاعَ and تَجِدَ الْمَرْأَةُ مَحْرَمًا لَهَا Yani, part of having the ability, and there's a fine point of fiqh that the Shaykh mentions in this particular statement here, that's very important, pay careful attention to it, that part of having the ability is that the woman finds or has available a mahram to accompany her. فَإِن لَمْ تَجِدْ مَحْرَمًا فَإِنَّ الْحَاجْ لَا يَجِبُ عَلَيْهَا If she didn't find a mahram, then Hajj is not obligatory upon her. The Shaykh is saying here, and the clarification comes in what follows, that aslan, originally Hajj is not obligatory upon her. Some scholars differed. They said it's not obligatory upon her to perform the Hajj. If everything else is in order but she didn't find a mahram, then the ada, the fulfillment of Hajj is not obligatory. But the asl of Hajj is still obligatory upon her. Some other scholars are saying something different. Listen to the fine point here, okay? Shaykh is saying, if she didn't find a mahram, Hajj is not obligatory on her, aslan. Some scholars are saying, Hajj is still obligatory on her. But when it came time for her to go and she didn't find a mahram, it's not obligatory on her to try to fulfill the obligation of Hajj because she doesn't have a mahram to travel with her. But the Hajj is still obligatory upon her. That means then she has to send somebody else. Because Hajj is still obligatory upon her. Shaykh is saying no. If she doesn't have a mahram, Hajj aslan is not obligatory on her. And the clarification of that comes in what he said here. He said, I'll repeat, if she didn't find a mahram, the Hajj is not obligatory upon her. لكن اختلف العلماء. But the scholars have differed concerning this matter. هل يجب عليها في هذه الحال أن يقيم من يحج عنها أو يعتمر؟ يعني so in this state where everything else is present of the conditions, but she didn't find a mahram, is it obligatory upon her in that condition to appoint, to establish, to set up, to facilitate somebody else to perform the Hajj or the Umrah on her behalf? أو لا يجب. Or it's not obligatory upon her to send somebody else on her behalf. Is it obligatory on her? If she has everything else, but she doesn't find a mahram, is it obligatory for her to send somebody else on her behalf? Or it's not obligatory. Al qawlain li ahl al ilm. Sheikh is saying, there are two sayings from the people of knowledge, the ulama. Binan ala anna wujud al mahram hal huwa shartun li wujub al ada. أو هو شرط لوجوب من أصله. This is the point here. Okay? The Shaykh is saying there are two views of the scholars. Based upon this point, يعني of the presence or absence of a mahram, is the presence of the mahram a condition for the obligation of fulfilling the Hajj, or is it a condition for Hajj originally? There's a difference between the two. Okay? One view is that it's a condition for Hajj. So if it's not present, it's no obligation of Hajj. The other view, the second view, is that it's a condition لوجوب الأداء. That means that Hajj is still obligatory upon her, but she's not obligated to go herself because she doesn't have a mahram. But the Hajj still must be fulfilled by her sending somebody else on her behalf. Okay, this is a fine point. The Shaykh said, يعني there are two sayings of the scholars, and the Shaykh is saying المشهور عند الحنابلة رحمهم الله أن المحرم شرط للوجوب أصلا. يعني I added the word أصلا because that's how he said it in the beginning, just for clarity. يعني the Shaykh is saying the مشهور, what is well known amongst the Hanbali scholars, may Allah have mercy upon them, يعني is that the محرم, presence of a mahram, is a condition for Hajj to be obligatory. If it's not present, Hajj is not obligatory upon her. She doesn't have to send somebody else. There's no obligation upon her. وَأَنَّ الْمَرْأَةُ clarification. أَلَّتِي لَا تَجِدُ مَحْرَمًا لَيْسَ عَلَيْهَا حَجْ. The woman who doesn't find a mahram, there's no Hajj obligatory upon her. وَلَا يَلْزَمْهَا أَنْ يُقِيمُ أَوْ أَنْ تُقِيمُ مَنْ يَحُجُّ عَنْهَا. And it is not obligatory upon her to send somebody to perform Hajj on her behalf. And here I want to make a note. If anybody can understand, what does this mean? The Shaykh said, there's difference of opinion amongst the scholars. And then he said, listen to the words he said, Al-Mashhur inda al-Hanabila rahimahumullah anna al-Mahram shartun lil-wujub wa anna al-Mara allati la tajid mahraman laysa alayha hajj wa la yalzamuha an tuqimu man yahujju anha. What is the Shaykh saying here?
He's trying to say that even among the Hanabila there is
even amongst the Hanabila. That's one point. Because he said Al-Mashhur. Al-Mashhur in the Hanabila. That's one point. What other point is, can we understand? Okay, this is a good point, right? Right? The Mashhur tells us that there's some other views of the Hanabila. And the Shaykh is presenting the Mashhur view of the Hanabila. But there's another point also. Very subtle point here is that, yeah, well, first of all, of course, the Shaykh is saying his opinion is that which is well known amongst the Hanabila. But he also is not attributing this opinion to himself. He's saying this is the well known opinion amongst the Hanabila, and he seems to be in agreement with that opinion, though he's not forcefully yani defending it. He didn't even bring any evidence to support their position, which is seldom found for Shaykh al-Uthaymeen, that he takes a view except that he brings the evidence which shows that it's the stronger view, if he thinks that it's the stronger view. But he didn't bring any such thing here. He just said that's what's well known amongst the Hanabila, even though there's difference of opinion amongst the scholars and even amongst the Hanabila. But this is the view that he's presenting here. And then the Shaykh ends by saying, وَهَذِي شُرُوط خَمْسَ. These are five conditions for the obligation of Hajj. عَيْدُهَا أَقُولُ. And I'll repeat it by saying they are Islam, Al-Aql, Al-Bulugh, Al-Hurriya, Wal-Istita'ah. Yani the person has to be Muslim, sane, reach the age of responsibility, free and able with all that that includes. وَهَذِي الشُّرُوط تَشْمِلُوا الْحَجِّ وَالْعُمْرَ أَيْضًا. And these are the conditions that include, that are included, yani that include within it, the Hajj as well as the Umrah also. Then it's for Hajj and Umrah both. Okay, how much time left? We still have a few minutes. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Naam. Second opinion. Okay, aslan, yani wujub al-hajj or wujub ada al-hajj. The difference between them is that wujub al-hajj means that if these conditions are fulfilled, then it's obligated for the person to make hajj. If they are not fulfilled, there's no obligation on the person. Khalas, it is not applicable to them. Hajj is not applicable to them. The other people are saying, no, it's not a condition for wujub al-hajj aslan. The wujub, the obligation of hajj aslan is still applicable, even if you don't have a mahram. Because the conditions that are necessary for hajj to be obligatory on a person, yani are four. Not including the mahram. The mahram is only an extra condition for the woman to actually be able to travel. The other people are saying, even if she didn't have a mahram, hajj is still obligatory upon her. She has to perform hajj. If it came time to travel and she don't find nobody to travel with her, so she can't go, she has to send somebody. Yani, because this is only a condition for her to travel. It's not a condition for hajj to be obligatory. This is a condition just for her to travel. It's not a condition related to hajj. Do you understand the difference now? Okay, so the Shaykh is saying, there's a fine point of difference here on this matter. What is well known amongst the Hanabila, that's the view that he's presenting here, is that it's not just a condition for traveling. Rather, it's a condition for hajj. If this condition is not fulfilled, hajj is not obligatory upon her. She has no responsibility to send anybody to do anything else. Is it the same question?
Because usually what I understand in Islam, you find someone or you mend someone to do something for you. If you don't have hope to do that thing yourself,
no.
Abandon. But if the woman doesn't have a mahram right now, maybe she can have the mahram in the future.
Okay.
Why?
No. So you are arguing the point in behalf of Sheikh Al-Faymin. You're in agreement with him. Okay, so anyway, Abdul Haq, mashallah, is bringing some support for the opinion of the mashhur opinion of the Hanabila. He's saying that, I'm repeating it so that maybe the sisters can hear and also anybody who's listening online. The point he's saying is that if a person doesn't have the ability to do something obligatory, they don't have hope ever to be able to do it, then they excuse from it. But if they have hope in the future to be able to do it, they're not excused from it. They have to do it when they're able, right? So in that case, why should the woman be obligated to send somebody on her behalf? Maybe next year she'll have a mahram and she'll be able to go herself. Okay, so this is in support of the opinion of the Shaykh Al-Taymi now. Okay, the brother had his hand up. I want to come and then I'll come back to you now.
Shaykh, there is a hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam that there will come a time the woman will come from Basra or from Iraq and perform hajj safely and go back.
No.
But ulamas use that as an evidence that, you know,
yani, that there will come a time when women will be able to travel from one place to another safely, and then they use it as a proof of what? That's what I want to know. So in other words, they're saying then that hadith and their understanding of it contradicts the clear statements of the Prophet ﷺ that a woman is not allowed to travel without a mahram. I'm just saying. Yani, that's their understanding. Look, the hadith is not saying that a woman doesn't have to travel without a mahram when it became safe to travel. The hadith is not saying that. That's their understanding of the hadith. So now you're taking the mantuq, clear statement of the Prophet, prohibited for women to travel, and you are contradicting it, negating it by the mafhum, understanding of another hadith, which the Prophet ﷺ didn't say that, but some people might understand it like that. Okay. Can the mafhum, yani, negate the mantuq? Yani, can somebody's understanding of a statement, their understanding, that's not the clear, absolute meaning of it. Perhaps it could be understood like that. But to me, that's ba'id jiddan. But if a person understood it like that, are we saying their possible understanding of the hadith nullifies the clear statements of the Prophet? Not in usul fiqh of Islam, no. That's not possible. No, Brother Abdulaziz had his hand before him. I mean, after him, now. And we're going to stop here, inshallah. I wanted to read Sheikh Salih Fawzan's statements. He has a lot of important statements here, but qadr Allah, masha'Allah. Now.
Having the mahram is to avoid fitna during the Hajj?
All of it. All of it. Having the mahram, having the mahram is yani for the safety and security, the protection of the honor and integrity of the woman. Yani physical safety, her honor and so on. All of that is included in having the mahram for her to travel in general. Then there's additional danger to her performing Hajj because of the crowds and all of the other things that are involved in Hajj. Okay, that's additional. That's extra above and beyond. She's prohibited to travel just on a normal journey where she's not going to be in any crowds or anything. And then now added to that are the difficulties of Hajj.
That being said, I mean, is she able to choose for someone?
Can she look for somebody to accompany her? She can. She should. She should look for somebody. She must look for somebody. She can't just say, I don't think I have any mahram to go with me. No, she has to actually try to find a mahram for her. But a mahram has to be a close male relative from the prohibited degrees of marriage. Not find somebody like a nice guy, a mashallah, a imam of a masjid, I'll go with him. No. Yani Omar, and then we're going to stop here. Brothers, please let him have his question, please.
Suppose there is this person that has all of the means of going to Hajj, all of the requirement, but if he says to himself that I have to be called before because, I mean, based on the story of...
Do I have to be what?
Like a person who found all of the means at his disposal. And then says, but going to Hajj require being called.
Being called.
I have to be called before going to Hajj. Like some preachers say that.
Like being invited.
The Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, after he completed the building of the house, he made an announcement.
Yeah.
Calling the people towards Hajj.
Yeah.
And then everybody that heard of that call will go to Hajj, and those that didn't will not go to Hajj. So based on that, some preachers will say that not just having the means to go, but you have to be called before you can go to Hajj. What do you have to say about
it? Okay, this is a strange view. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with it, but yani, the idea that the brother is expressing is that there are some people who are saying that the conditions for the obligation of Hajj that the scholars of Islam and the people of Sunnah have mentioned are not all of the conditions. There's another condition that we didn't know about. It was being saved for this time. Yani nobody knew it before, but they just came up with it. That you have to be called, because the Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam called out the people to make Hajj, and therefore the people who heard his call, they will make Hajj. So that means that a person is saying, I didn't hear his call. Well, you know what? If you heard the Prophet ordering us to make Hajj, then you heard the call. Because the call of Ibrahim alayhi salam, the Prophet has established that call. He has commanded us. He has encouraged us in every kind of way. In lots of hadith, yani that is obligatory upon the Muslim to make Hajj. So if you heard the call of our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam, then how can you say you didn't hear the call? Yani meaning you didn't hear Ibrahim himself calling? Like you know what his voice sounds like and you didn't hear it. I mean, this is a strange view. I don't know if any legitimate scholars of the people of Sunnah say that, but I doubt it. Because all the books I've ever read on Hajj, and honestly, I have read a lot of books on Hajj, you know, because when I was overseas, we used to go to Hajj every year, and we used to teach Hajj, and we used to teach people from all over the world, and teach thousands of people, and from time to time, here and there, from everywhere. And we used to read a lot of books from the major scholars of Islam. I've never read in a book of any scholar of Islam, past or present, or in any book of fiqh, that this is a condition for making Hajj. You have to be called by the call of Ibrahim. It is a strange view. And I'm saying, if any scholars from the people of Sunnah have said that, then we'd like to kind of look at it, but nobody else said it. And I read the book of Sheikh Ibn Baz, the book of Sheikh Al-Albani, the book of Sheikh Al-Uthaymeen, Sheikh Abdul Muhsin Abad, Sheikh Abu Bakr Al-Jazari, so many scholars, Sheikh Salih Fawzan. No, we just got finished reading Sheikh Salih Fawzan, Sheikh Uthaymeen, a lot of other scholars. Nobody is saying that this is a condition.
I'm not saying that any scholar said that that was a condition of going to Hajj, but I'm saying that a lot of people that preach about Hajj sometimes will say that this is something that if Allah decreed for you to go, you will go. If not,
okay. So this is a different issue. We're going to stop with this, right? If they're saying that this is something that Allah decreed. Of course, Allah decreed everything. So if a person doesn't pray, even though they're able to pray, and they say, I didn't pray because Allah didn't decree for me to pray, is that an excuse? The divine decree could be used as a proof for people?
The same thing he alludes to, like you have to be invited.
Okay, but the point I'm saying is this. Look, if the meaning of their statement is that Allah didn't decree for me to go, that's why I didn't go. So, the decree of Allah is not an excuse for a person not fulfilling an obligatory duty. It's not an excuse. Because every sinner who didn't fast Ramadan, who didn't make salat, who didn't give zakat, who didn't go to Hajj, can say, I didn't make salat because Allah didn't decree it. But Allah didn't decree it means that Allah knew that you were not going to do it. So Allah wrote that you're not going to do it. Not that Allah made you not do it. The divine decree means Allah knows what people are going to do. So He wrote what He knows is going to happen. Divine decree is not an excuse for a person to say, well, since Allah didn't write it for me to do it, then I'm not to blame for that. And how do you know beforehand that Allah didn't decree it, so such that when the Hajj came and you have the ability and the means, and you say, well, maybe Allah didn't decree, so I'm not going to try to go. Anyway, that's the end of that discussion. Jazakallah khair. It's a good point, even though I never heard it before, but it's a good point to bring out some other points. And now it's time for the last class. Inshallah, we're going to begin the last class. Yeah, Ibrahim. Ibrahim didn't ask any question today. What is it, brother? That money that you found on the floor that belongs to Abdul Karim. Fell out of his pocket when he got up from Salat. Now. Yeah, inshallah. I don't know what to say about it. Yani, that's the opinion of some of the scholars, that Hajj and Umrah are both obligatory. That's from the first class. Let's discuss it when we have time, inshallah. I mean, because it may take some time. And the time is running against us. We're already over time, and the time for the class is ready for the next class. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.